Hello, everyone, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We're reading the Messenger for Tuesday, January 19th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening, as always. It was a pretty Tuesday in Fort Dodge. Had some clouds early, and finally some sunshine came through and made things look warm, even though it didn't really get all that warm today in Fort Dodge. We'll go ahead and get to the articles in the paper. The Duncombe City Council is going to fill a vacancy. The Duncombe City Council plans to fill a vacant seat on the council during its February 10th meeting. The city announced on Monday that Councilmember Ryan Hansen had resigned his seat on December 20th. Iowa code allows the city council to fill a vacancy by appointment. However, the electors in Duncombe had the right to file a petition to require the vacancy be filled by a special election. Petitions for a special election to fill the vacancy will need to be submitted by the February 10th meeting. People wishing to be considered to be appointed to the vacancy shall submit a request in writing to the city clerk by noon on February 8th at City Hall, 421 Main Street. Hansen was elected to a four-year term in November 2019, and his term was set to expire on December 31st, 2023. An appointment filling the vacancy would be effective from February 10th until the next city election in November 2021. The City Council in Fort Dodge is looking at the parks budget. The COVID-19 pandemic kept people out of the swimming pools and away from organized recreational activities last year. This year may not be much different. We don't expect a large change in behavior, said Lori Brandehorse, Director of Parks, Recreation, and Forestry in Fort Dodge, said Monday evening. She presented a proposed budget to the City Council that cuts about 460 department reduced. We'll be taking on the new mission of maintaining Fort Dodge Memorial Park Cemetery at 5th Avenue South, 32nd Street. That site was essentially abandoned by its previous owner, and the city government ended up taking it over following a legal process called receivership. It is an additional expense, said Jeff Nemers, the city clerk and finance director. It is something we had to take. The proposed parks and rec budget for the fiscal year that will begin July 1st is $1,052,820, down from the current budget of $1,146,775. The department generates revenue from fees charged for things like playing golf, signing up for recreation programs, or getting into Rosedale Rapids Aquatics Center to help pay for its operations. Aquatics Center says it was a tough year, Brandehorse said. We just did not have the traffic through the pool last year. The proposed budget for the Aquatics Center is $282,550. Councilman Terry Minke asked if there is a space at the Aquatics Center at 10th Avenue North and 36th Street to build an indoor pool. I'm just not comfortable having an outdoor facility being our primary water feature, he said. Brandehorse said there is space available to the east of the current facility. Councilman Kim Allstott said he agreed with Minke about the need for an indoor pool and added that members of the public have told him they would like such a facility. There are no plans at this time to build an indoor pool. Under budget categories in Fort Dodge, the budget for Parks Rec is divided into multiple categories. The proposed general fund for the 2021-2022 budget is $1,052,820, broken down into three categories. Harlan Hazel Rogers Sports Complex runs $374,300. Rosedale Rapids Aquatic Center, $282,550. Parks Maintenance, $212,880. Citizen Central, $112,000. Splash Pad, $18,125. Trails Maintenance, $4,000. Lakeside Municipal Golf Course, which is not part of the city's general fund, has a separate budget of $486,270. From our files shows a picture. Sergeant Nathan Fields' fiancée, Connie Groover, is shown along with an identified friend of the family placing a yellow rose on Fields' casket during gravesite services. Field was killed January 7, 2006 at Umm Qasr, Iraq, after the Humvee he was riding in was struck by an Iraqi vehicle. and that is this date in history from 2006. Fort Dodge police logs reflect two domestic calls on Thursday, a theft in the 1100 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest, a noise disturbance in the 1300 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest, a suspicious vehicle in the 200 block of North 18th Street, a burglary in progress in the 200 block of Avenue F, a fight in the 900 block of 1st Avenue North, a theft in the 100 block of Avenue M West, a car accident in the 800 block of North 25th Street, suspicious vehicle, 3000 block 5th Avenue South, and another suspicious vehicle, 500 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest, Fort Dodge police logs for Thursday. On Friday, the police logs reflect six domestic calls, a suspicious vehicle in the 1100 block of South 26th Street, car accident in the 100 block of South 29th, juvenile problems near 6th Avenue North and Forest Avenue, harassment in the 1300 block of 5th Avenue North, criminal mischief in the 100 block of North 10th Street, counterfeiting in the 1300 block of A Street West, and a drug violation in the 500 block of North 22nd Street. Those are the police logs for Friday. On Saturday, a burning complaint was reported in the 3100 block of 10th Avenue South. Harassment in the 100 block of North 10th Street. Suspicious vehicle, 3500 block of 5th Avenue South. Theft in the 700 block of 7th Avenue North. Shoplifter in the 3100 block of 5th Avenue South. Harassment in the 100 block of 5th Avenue North. Car accident in the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South. Suspicious vehicle in the 600 block of North 15th Street. Shoplifter in the 3000 block of 1st Avenue South. Car accident in the 1000 block of South 20th Street. And a suspicious vehicle in the 2700 block of 5th Avenue South. An assault in progress in the 300 block of Avenue M West. That's the police log for Saturday. On Sunday, Fort Dodge police logs reflect two domestic calls. Harassment in the 1200 block of South 22nd Street. Noise disturbance in the 10 block of South 11th Street. A suspicious vehicle in the 3000 block of 5th Avenue South. An assault in the 2000 block of North 15th Street. A property dispute in the 2900 block of 1st Avenue South. A car accident was reported in the 700 block of North 14th Street. A suspicious vehicle in the 300 block of South 12th Street. A shooting in the 800 block of Kenyon Road. Car accident in the was reported on 230th Street. A noise disturbance in the 300 block of Avenue M West. And the suspicious person was reported in the 100 block of North 12th Street. That is the Fort Dodge police record for Sunday. Regarding that shooting, a Fort Dodge man was treated for a gunshot wound to his hand after Fort Dodge police say he discharged his weapon Sunday evening in an apparent accident. Fort Dodge police said the 23-year-old shot himself after discharging his newly purchased gun in the 300 block of 11th Avenue North. A log of police calls for service indicates he arrived to Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center, by 5:21 Sunday. The male was lucky to have only sustained minor injuries, said Captain Ryan Grunberg, public information officer for the Fort Dodge Police Department. This is a great reminder for those handling firearms to use extreme caution and know how the weapon functions before ever loading it with live ammunition. Taking the time that proper safety precautions are being taken can prevent an unfortunate accident. A new airline and sign coming to the local airport is the title of the next article. The transition to a new airline at Fort Dodge Regional Airport is underway. United Express, operated by SkyWest Airlines Incorporated, will take over for Air Choice One on March 1st. Rhonda Chambers, the airport's director of aviation, told the city council Monday evening that SkyWest Airlines already has personnel at the airport. She said the airline is conducting training sessions in the terminal's basement conference room. United Express has 50 passenger jets, which will link Fort Dodge and Chicago O'Hare International Airport. There, passengers can board United Airlines flights to destinations across the world and around the country. They will be able to make those connections without having to recheck their bags. In December, the United States Department of Transportation selected that carrier to serve Fort Dodge with the aid of a $3 million annual subsidy from the Essential Air Service program. That program provides money to ensure that airlines continue to serve smaller communities. Passengers going to the airport for United Airlines flights will soon be directed by a new sign welcoming people to the site. Chambers said the stainless steel double-sided sign will be 30 feet long and 7 feet tall. It should be pretty spectacular, she said. The sign is to be installed this summer. Chambers talked about the new airline transition and the new sign as she presented the airport's proposed budget for 2021-22. To the city council, the proposal calls for spending $677,015, up from a current budget of $653,113. The airport generates some revenue, so not all of that $677,015 will be coming from city property taxes. The revenue includes landing fees, rent from businesses that are located there, income from farmland that is part of the airport complex, and a fee of 6 cents per gallon added to the price of every gallon of aviation fuel sold there. Because of that revenue, city property owners will pay $296,568 for an airport that costs about $677,000 to run. State Patrol Trooper Ben Miller, Khalil Justin Crawley, 18, of Waterloo, is driving a 2013 Volkswagen car northbound on Interstate 35 when another trooper attempted to pull him over for going 92 miles per hour. Crowley attempted to flee, taking off at a high speed, exiting eastbound onto U.S. Highway 20 before he turned southbound on County Road R-77. Crowley lost control of the vehicle at the intersection of R-77 and County Road D-41, with the vehicle entering the east ditch and rolling several times. Crowley was wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash and was taken by an ambulance to Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames to be treated for minor injuries. A 16-year-old female passenger in Crowley's vehicle, also in Waterloo, was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash and was transported to Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines by Mercy One Air Care. Miller did not have an update on the status of the passenger's injuries Monday afternoon. The pursuit and crash remain under investigation by the Iowa State Patrol, and Miller said that charges are expected to be filed at the conclusion of the investigation. Miller said it is not yet clear why Crowley attempted to flee the initial traffic stop. The Iowa State Patrol was assisted by the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office, Jewel Ellsworth Police Department, and Ellsworth Ambulance. We'll take a look at the Freeman Journal. They have an article entitled Snow Day. With a day off from school and several inches of wet snow to inspire them, some kids on First Street spent Friday building snowmen, having snowball fights, and even building an igloo. Casey Jones, 14, Ty Coons, age 12, Easton Moss, 8, and Liam Cowles, age 5, all pitched in to help pack more than 90 snow squares to create the igloo. They spent several hours stacking the squares and placing them securely. The boys also took some time to help out their neighbors by shoveling the sidewalks in the neighborhood. Legacy Learning is going to hold a virtual fundraiser. Officials with Legacy Learning Boone River Valley were hoping to hold another in-person annual fundraiser, building on the success and interest of the first event held October 2019. The second event planned for November 2020 was with keynote speaker Kelly Boone, but with COVID-19 restrictions, the fundraiser cannot be held. Fundraiser has now moved to an online fundraiser through January 29th. The organization will be selling raffle tickets on its website, legacylearningbrv.org. Click on the link to purchase tickets. One ticket is $5 or 5 tickets for $20. The prizes for the raffle include a pastel of the Briggs Woods Waterfall, a sculpture by Maureen Siemens, a sculpture by Madeline Loring, a $100 gift certificate, a handmade quilt, and other items. The winners will be drawn on January 30th. The City Council of Webster City will hear a presentation by Williams & Company PC on the 2019-2020 City Audit Monday night when the Council meets via Zoom at 6 o'clock. The Council will also hear a presentation and update by RDG Planning and Design on the City's new comprehensive plan, the appointment of a representative and an alternative representative to the Hamilton County Solid Waste Commission is expected to be made. Councilman Brian Miller is expected to be appointed to the representative and Mayor John Hawkins, the alternate. A change order for the 2020-713 Second Street Facade Project with Westbrook Construction will also be considered by the council. A resolution approving the commitment of matching funds for an application of funding to the Iowa Economic Development Authority Community Catalyst Building Remediation Program for the remediation of 713 Second Street will be reviewed. According to a council memo, the program assists communities with the redevelopment, rehabilitation, or deconstruction of buildings to stimulate economic growth or reinvestment in the community. Funds are available for the rehabilitation of one commercial building per community or two buildings with the same ownership that are adjacent. The city must be the applicant and provide financial or in-kind resources. Community Vitality Director Lindsay Henderson said a $100,000 grant would be sought for the interior rehabilitation at the former Elks Building, with a match commitment from the city of up to 50% of the grant award. The council will consider a resolution accepting the minor subdivision of Lynn Addition in Hamilton County. The date and time of a public hearing on the proposed offer to buy city-owned property at 313 Broadway Street is expected to be set for February 1st at 6:05 p.m. Several contracts and agreements are also on the agenda for Monday night's meeting. A resolution authorizing the mayor and city clerk to enter into a task order amendment number 2 for professional services with DGR Engineering of Rock Rapids, providing for an electrical system study in the amount not to exceed $23,500. An agreement for the 2021 Asphalt Joint Crack Seal Project of Fort Dodge Asphalt Company of Fort Dodge and the amount of $86,000 will be considered. A 3-year agreement with J. Petticord Incorporated, Bondurant, for tree grinding services in the amount of $14,500 per year is also on the agenda. Prior to the start of the business, the council will convene the Fair Housing Board and will elect a chairperson and vice chairperson, along with appointing the investigating committee for the board. At the close of the meeting, the council will meet in closed session to discuss the purchase or sale of real estate. They will also meet in closed session to evaluate the performance of City Clerk Carol Bonjour. And those are stories that we find in the Freeman Journal. Turning back over to the Messenger, I'll click on the Lifestyle section, and we'll take a look at recent birthdays and anniversaries. Burdette and Karen Shipman, 65 years. Burdette and Karen Shipman of Fort Dodge will celebrate their 65th wedding anniversary on Wednesday. Their family includes Randy and Roxy Shipman, Cindy and Dave Roberts, Jent Kim and Joe Kesterson, and Mark Shipman. They have 13 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren. Their daughter Brenda Shipman is deceased. Karen Williams and Burdette Shipman were married on January 20, 1956 in Fort Dodge. He is retired from Friskies. She worked at Globe Union and the Sandstone. Lois Christopher. Lois Christopher of Thor will celebrate her 90th birthday on January 30th. Lois Torkelson was born at home on the family farm west of Humboldt and graduated with the class of 1950 from Humboldt High School. In 1953, she married Richard Dick Christopher. They farmed north of Thor their entire married life. He passed away in 2011, and in 2019, she moved into town. Joe Skinner. Joe Skinner of Goldfield will celebrate his 90th birthday on January 27th. His family includes his wife of 61 years, Phyllis, Ken and Annie Skinner, Kurt and Linda Skinner. He has two grandsons. Mr. Skinner was born January 27, 1931 in Goldfield, graduated from Goldfield High School in 1948, and worked for the United States Post Office for 38 years, retiring in 1993. Janet Kinney. Janet Kinney will celebrate her 80th birthday on Friday. Janet is from Eagle Grove. Her family includes her husband Robert, Beth McGonigal, and Barb and Tony Martin. She has four grandchildren, and Janet was born January 22nd, 1941. And that looks like that's it for birthdays and anniversaries. Take a quick look and see if there are any new arrivals to tell you about. And there aren't, so we'll switch over to another story. Clarion Ambulance Service is going to have a chili fundraiser on Wednesday. The Clarion Ambulance Service is holding a drive-through chili fundraiser from 5:30 to 7 Wednesday at the Ambulance Garage on 1st Avenue Southwest across from the fire station. The menu is chili, cornbread, cinnamon rolls, crackers, and dessert bar for a free will donation. Taking Care of Fort Dodge is the title of an article from the Lifestyle section. The answer to the question of what the Parks, Fort Dodge Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Department does could be best answered by asking what they don't do. To describe what Fort Dodge Parks, Recreation, and Forestry is, that we have a little bit of something for everyone, said Lori Brandehorst, the director of the Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Department. Brandehorst said the department's mission is to enrich the lives of all Fort Dodge citizens by providing parkland, open spaces, and wholesome recreational opportunities. The mission is accomplished, Brandehorst said, through either organized activities or passive recreation activities. In our world, passive recreation are things that don't have a fee attached, such as our parks, trails, disc golf courses, playgrounds, tennis, and basketball courts. Then we have the other ones that are programmable areas, which are going to be areas like the golf course, ballparks, and swimming pools. Really, when we sit and think about who we are and what we are to a community, it is really about adding value to our citizens that live in our community through wellness and quality of life. Fort Dodge Parks, Rec, and Forestry Department, which is located in the Citizen Central Building, offers a wide array of services, more than what Brandehorst expects the majority of citizens of Fort Dodge and Webster County realize. A misconception would probably be just how much we really do take care of. We have two cemeteries we care for. We also have all the bike trails, which includes water trails, hard surface trails, mountain bike trails, some that have just been put in the last few years, and some of them are our best kept secrets, she said. The bigger entities cared for by the Fort Dodge Parks, Rec, and Forestry Department include Lakeside Municipal Golf Course, Rosedale Rapids Aquatic Center, and the Harlan Rogers Sports Complex. Those are our big beasts, said Brandehorst. Those are some of our facilities that really contribute a lot to the region. They are money generators, but we are a lot bigger than that. Those facilities are also bigger tourism draws to the community and county due to partnerships. Brandehorst said with the local high school districts and Iowa Central Community College, bringing state softball and state, regional, and national cross-country meets. Another misunderstanding surrounding the department is their programs. Another misconception is that everything costs something, she said. We have everything from free programs up to the golf memberships. We really have something, hopefully, for everybody in the community. Many of the projects and programs through the department our collaborative projects, said Brandehorst. We are proud to be a part of a strong city and county team that brings new developments and new improvements to our community. It's a team. Our quality of life has grown just tremendously in the last 10 to 15 years because of these wonderful partnerships with the city and county and their different departments. And don't forget the forestry part of the Fort Dodge Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Department. We take care of all the trees in the city's right-of-way. That is all of us, she said. We are also in charge of the streetscape, these flowers and plants. We have a big department, and we cover a lot of what you see every day driving around. Just like most everybody in our world right now, we really have had to change what we do and how we provide services because of COVID-19. We have to figure out how to keep our community engaged and how to keep them active. At the beginning of the rise of the pandemic, Brandehorst said the department's team sat down and reevaluated what they could offer for services. We came up with monthly and weekly activities. We got creative as a staff looking for fun things to do. The nice thing about our group is we are diversified. One is a runner. She likes doing those virtual 5Ks, training, exercise. Another one loves doing programs with arts and crafts. Together, the department came up with a new set of programs as well as a new way to present them. Individuals were home, families were home, and we are trying to engage people into activities that is something new for both physical and mental health. Sometimes people just don't know what to do, where to go, and how to do it, so we wanted to provide some fun things that they could do. Some have zero costs, some have minimal cost. Brandehorst said the department has been hosting virtual events and other fun programs such as scavenger hunts. That was kind of meeting our checkbox of getting families outside and being active and doing that safely, she said. Some of these program changes, doing them virtually at your own convenience, Brandehorst said, will most likely continue after COVID. Not always can somebody come to a gym at 5:30 a.m. workout or go to a gym at 7 o'clock and have a basketball game or a class, but they can get the stuff we have and do it any time at their schedule. Those are new angles we have taken on to give something they can do that their own time allows. Some virtual activities on the horizon include the Snow Cold Virtual 5K. Race dates are January 29th through the 31st. Times are to be submitted by February 1st. Brandehorst said this 5K can be done on a treadmill, outside utilizing the trail system, or in your backyard. Cost is $20, which includes a long sleeve t-shirt. You can run or walk, just challenge yourself to a virtual 5K. Another program centered around 5 to 7-year-olds. This is a craft program that will be done virtually by Zoom. It will be held on February 2nd, 9th, 16th, and the 23rd. Brandehorst said the entire staff all bring something to the table. Our department works to find something for everyone in all ages, whether it is swimming, golfing, craft, arts. I have seen a lot of programs come and go, and a lot of them come from the interests each of our staff has. It is fun to have a diversified set of staff because with a diverse set of staff comes a diverse set of programs. Brandehorst said this new way of programming has been very well received. Response has been good, she said. I love watching Facebook posts and the comments coming to our site thanking us. Those things are very warm and endearing and satisfying. Moving forward, Brandehorst is hopeful in-person programming will be able to resume soon. We kind of feel like we are getting a little below that 15% positivity rate for COVID. That is kind of our line that we talk about getting together or not getting together. Our hope is we are going to be launching a few more activities that are limited but in person. Whether that is exercise or crafts, we want to start getting us back together. Brandehorst said the Fort Dodge Parks Recreation and Forestry Department can be contacted via their Facebook page, the city's website, or by phone. We are happy to visit with anybody and let them know how we can better serve their needs in the community, she said. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to our obituary page. R. Janine Cochran. Rose Janine Cochran, 90, died on January 17th, at Arbor Springs in West Des Moines. Janine was born in Ankeny on April 7th, 1930, to Floyd and Leela Johnson Hirsch. She graduated from Ankeny High School in 1947. Janine attended Iowa State University in Ames and studied home economics. After attending Iowa State University, Janine took a job in Newton serving as a secretary at the Jasper County Extension Office. That is where she met her husband, Dale Cochran. Dale and Janine were married 66 years before he passed away in August 2018. They were married in June 1952 in Ankeny, and soon after that, Janine and Dale returned to his family's farm near Vincent to work on the farm. Janine spent the years raising three girls, helping to raise chickens to produce eggs that she would take to Fort Dodge to sell. She made countless meals and was a master of organization. Janine was a member of the Vincent United Methodist Church and loved participating in their various activities and ladies' aid. She was always there to lend a hand during bake sales and volunteered her time to help out when needed. She was a very generous and giving person. In 1964, Janine began serving as Dale's legislative secretary in the Iowa House of Representatives, where he was elected to that position. She continued to serve as a legislative secretary through 1998. Janine was an avid campaigner for Dale during his many years of service to the state of Iowa. She would go door-to-door handing out literature and visiting with constituents about why her husband was the best man for the job. She traveled with Dale to all 99 counties in Iowa to campaign for him when he ran for Iowa Secretary of Agriculture. She always did this with a smile on her face, with energy and a zest for life. People would comment that they were voting for Dale because they loved and enjoyed Janine so much. She was a classy and smart woman. Janine is survived by her three daughters, Deborah and Jeff Freese, Cynthia and John Forbes, Tamara Matthews, her grandchildren, Stephanie and Corey Schmadeke, Ryan and Sierra Fries, Adam Forbes, Meredith and James Swanson, and her great-grandchildren, Christian and Gavin Schmadeke, London and Gemma Fries, and Logan and Kennedy Swanson. Janine was preceded in death by her husband, Dale M. Cochran, her parents, and her brother, Randall Hirsch. The family would like to give a most sincere thank you to the staff of Arbor Springs and Suncrest Hospice. We thank you for treating our loved one like your loved one. Funeral services are at 11 o'clock Thursday, January 21st at Isles Westover Chapel. Her family will receive friends beginning at 10 o'clock Thursday, 1 hour prior to the service. Interment will be at 2:30 Thursday at North Lawn Cemetery. For those unable to attend, the funeral service will be available through a live stream link that will appear at 10:45 on Thursday, just prior to the service, on Janine's obituary page at www.ilescares.com. That's ILESCARES.com, where you may sign the guest book and leave an online condolence. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Animal Rescue League of Iowa or St. Jude's Children's Hospital. From Humboldt, Leo Grebner. Leo F. Grebner, 78, of Humboldt, died Thursday, January 14th. Private family services were held on Monday, January 18th at Mason Linhart Funeral Home in Humboldt, with burial in the Union Cemetery at Humboldt. Leo was born January 31st, 1942, in Fort Dodge. The son of George and Elsie Zabel Grebner, he attended Country School Weaver No. 6 in Gilmore City, later graduated from Humboldt High School in 1960. He was united in marriage to his high school sweetheart, Linda Andrews, on February 2, 1963, the California chick his friend said was unattainable. A couple moved to California for a time where Leo worked for General Motors. In 1966, they moved back to Humboldt, where he worked for 24 years at Humboldt County Lumber. He then spent another 19 years working for the Humboldt Water Department. His passion was the 49 years he spent at the Humboldt County Dragway every Saturday night greeting friends, both known and unknown, at the entry gate with a big smile. He is survived by his wife, Linda, his children, Rick and Shelley Grebner, Jason and Crystal Grebner, son-in-law, Tom Fisher, grandchildren Nathan, Brandon, Tyler, Ryan, Madison, and Braden, 5 great-grandchildren, his twin brother Larry Grebner, brother-in-law Dale Carmen. He was preceded in death by his parents, a daughter Cindy, sisters Betty Vaught and Donna Carmen, a brother Marvin Grebner, brothers-in-law John Vaught and Russell Gettings, and sisters-in-law Ione Grebner and Mary Lou Gettings. Leo had a zest for living, enjoying many of the simple things in life, whether it be his maniacally straight lines with the lawnmower, being the first in the neighborhood to remove snow, or sharing a cold one with family and friends. One of his true loves was the various automobiles he owned and built over the years. It was far more than the cars themselves, but the family bonds and friendships formed. The yearly family gatherings at Cruise to the Woods in Fort Dodge were always a highlight. Leo will always be remembered for his always present electric smile, one finger wave, and perfect white hair. The family hopes that his legacy will live on in each of us, learning that simple kindness, a smile, and a hand wave to perfect strangers can change the world and have profound impacts on the people around us. The family is eternally grateful to the outstanding doctors and nurses at Humboldt County Memorial Hospital and Trinity Regional Hospital in Fort Dodge, whose care and compassion for Leo touched their hearts. In lieu of flowers or memorials, the family asked for a donation in Leo's name to the local hospital foundations. For online condolences, the memorial information, go to masonlinhart.com. Harold Knudsen. Harold Knudsen, 94, of Duncombe, died Sunday, January 10th in Mesa, Arizona. Visitation is 1 o'clock on Friday, January 22nd at Gunderson Funeral Home, with burial to follow at 3 o'clock at the Washington Township Cemetery in Duncombe. Arrangements are with Gunderson Funeral Home. Arliss K. Geimer. Arliss K. Geimer, 81, of Lorville, formerly of Renwick, died Wednesday, December 23rd at the Dobson House Hospice in Chandler, Arizona. No services are planned at this time. She was preceded in death by her mother and stepfather, Pauline and Dale Rapp, father Henry Cooper, infant sister Linda Sue Rapp, brothers Dennis Rapp and Wayne Rapp. Arliss is survived by her husband Eugene, sons Michael and Deb Geimer, Brett and Donna Geimer, 8 grandchildren, 14 great-grandchildren, and her sister Lois Thompson. Robert V. Gray. From Rolfe, Robert V. Gray, 70, died Thursday, January 14th. Services will be held at a later date. Powers Funeral Home in Rolfe is handling arrangements. From Belmont, Frank J. Negrette. Mass of the Christian Burial for Frank J. Negrette will be 10:30 Friday at St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Belmont. Visitation is 5 to 7 Thursday at Ewing Funeral Home in Belmont. From Early, Mike Yender. Mass of the Christian Burial for Mike Yender will be 10:30 Thursday at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Early. Visitation is 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday at Church. Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home in Sac City is in charge of arrangements. From Goldfield, Joyce Demerly. Public visitation for Joyce Demerly will be from 12 to 1:30 Thursday at Faust Funeral Home in Eagle Grove. Funeral service is for family only. Faust Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Sac City, Gail Hansen. Private graveside services for Gail Hansen will be January 21st at the Newell Cemetery in Newell. Public visitation runs from 12 to 2 Thursday at the Nain Lutheran Church in Newell. Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that is the extent of today's obituary page. Quite a bit of sports to get to. It's been a few days since we've had time to cover any of the sports. We'll start with dual credit. From Dayton, as a young kid, Aaron Graves played every sport he could and loved every minute of it. As the Southeast Valley junior got older, he knew football was his calling. He still loved to play basketball, though, and didn't want to give that up. Wrestling was also a passion in the early stages of his athletic life. He chose the hardwood, though, during the first 2 years with the Jaguars. After announcing his intentions to play football for the University of Iowa, Graves thought long and hard about returning to the mat. So instead of choosing this year, the 3-time All-State lineman just decided to do both sports. I wanted to go out for wrestling because it helps for football and leverage on the line. I just thought it would be fun, Graves said. A lot of Iowa linemen were great wrestlers, so I figured it would help a lot. As a youngster, Graves wrestled while in elementary school, then again in 7th and 8th grade. I wrestled in junior high a little bit, and when I was very young, he said, I lost one match in 7th grade and went undefeated my 8th grade year. I didn't even think about doing both in high school at first. I just did basketball, so that's what I went with originally. Being a two-sport winter athlete has all but eliminated Graves' free time, but he also feels more prepared for the rigors of football and the upcoming season and beyond. It's a lot doing both and lifting, too, Grace said. I don't have as much free time as before, but that's okay because I'm getting good work in. His first match of the season was a bit taxing, but the Jaguar Jr. has found his rhythm on the mat. It was very nerve-wracking, the first match, he said. I hadn't been on the mat in 3 years, so it was a process getting back into shape for that, both physically and mentally. Graves has compiled a 21-3 record to date. 14 of his 21 wins are by fall, with 13 of which are in the first period. His only losses are to Class 2A's 5th-ranked Cameron Stevenson of Grinnell and twice to Pocahontas Area's 2nd-ranked Dane Johnson. I think wrestling translates to football very well in that you use your hands and leverage to get the best angle to move the person in front of you, Graves said. The Twin Lakes Conference meet went well. I would love to have performed better in the finals match, but it is what it is, and our team did well, so I'm not too disappointed. Grace was 2nd at the TLC meet. His only loss was the 285-pound championship tilt to Johnson by a score of 6-0. On the hardwood, Graves has scored 143 points and is averaging 11.9 per contest to go along with 6.3 rebounds. The Jaguars are currently 7-5 overall heading into a Tuesday contest at Manson Northwest Webster. Through all of his work in both sports, Grace has been able to lean on his family for support. My family has supported me throughout this whole thing with my decision, he said. They have helped with scheduling and keeping me on top of what I have that week and where I need to be. Heading back to the main page of the sports section, Ort Meyer's long-awaited debut with Triton Women finally comes this week. That'll be the title of the next article. Ahead of his first game as head coach of Iowa Central Women this week, Brian Ort Meyer is more anxious than nervous. Ort Meyer, who replaced Kelly Kruger following his retirement, leads the Tritons against defending ICCAC champion North Iowa Area Insight Hodges Fieldhouse Wednesday night. Iowa Central went 17-14 a year ago, finished an even 8-8 in the league. Four sophomores returned from that roster, Jordan Ingebrook, Jessica Jackson, Isabel West, and Jackie Stevenson. Jackson continues to make her way back from knee surgery, which limited her to just one game a year ago. I'm very excited, Ort Meyer said, and I know the girls are excited too. We have a solid group of players that are going to be able to allow us to compete in this region. Ort Meyer, a native of Nebraska, spent the previous four seasons leading Laramie County. He helped start the program and build it from the ground up, earning back-to-back winning seasons. He made stops in Colorado Northwestern, Dakota State, and McPherson College. West led the Tritons as a freshman at 13 points per game, shooting over 48% from the field with 7.5 rebounds and 2 assists a night. Ingbrook chipped in 9 points a game and was 31% shooter from behind the 3-point line. Stevenson had 36 points and 44 rebounds, while Jackson had 95 points and 89 rebounds during the 2019-2020 campaign. Those sophomores have really helped in terms of giving us experience here and making the transition go smoothly. We also have some talented freshmen that have stepped up in practice. One of those is former Webster City standout Taylor McKinney. The sharp shooting guard set numerous school records and finished her senior season with 369 points and 52 made triples. Taylor has been really strong in practice. She can shoot the ball and handle it well. She's been very impressive to me. Ort Meyer also mentioned the play of Carly West, a newcomer from Minnesota, adding she brings speed and athleticism and a great ability to get to the rim. Beatrice Scott, who started 21 games for Southeast Valley last year with 43 points, 72 rebounds, 15 steals, and 10 assists, is also on the roster. Fort Dodge senior high graduate Rachel Spohr will serve as the team manager. Heading back to the main page of sports, busy week for the Fort Dodge wrestling team. The Fort Dodge wrestling team wound up having a long stretch to prepare for top-ranked Southeast Polk. Fourth-ranked Fort Dodge Dodgers are 3-0 overall and hit the mat for the first time in 12 days after winter conditions forced the cancellation of a Thursday's duel and Saturday's tournament. The Dodgers pit their 8th-ranked wrestlers against the Rams 9 in a CIML cross-conference clash. Varsity action will begin at approximately 7:30. Weather permitting, it will be a busy week for the Dodgers. Head coach Bobby Thompson also heads to Ames for a triangular with the Little Cyclones and Des Moines Roosevelt on Thursday before going to the Waverly Shell Rock Invitational on Saturday. Southeast Polk is a team we need to see. There are about 8 teams that I feel will prepare us well for the state tournament, and they are one of them. It's going to be weird having a duel on Tuesday night, but that is the way the season has gone. We didn't have school Monday and missed the weekend tournament, so we are out of our routine. Hopefully our guys will show up and compete hard. Fort Dodge's number 4 Max Bishop will face off against top-rated Nate Jezroga at 113. Fourth-ranked Dodgers senior Lane Cowell is set to face 10th-ranked Cooper Hansen at 120. Number 2 Joel Jezroga of Southeast Polk and 3rd-ranked Fort Dodge Dodger Drazon Phillips are slated to square off at 145. Aiden Kingery at 132, who is ranked number 3, and number 1 in another poll, is scheduled to take on 10th-ranked Fort Dodge freshman Demarion Ross. Senior Drake Ayala, ranked number 1 in the nation at 126, will also look to add to his 151 career victories. Also ranked for Fort Dodge is Drew Ayala, number 6 at 103, Cody Cook, number 6 at 160, Tucker Peterson, number 10 at 170. Other ranked wrestlers for the Rams are Carter Martinson, number 2 at 138, Carson Martinson, number 4 at 152, Andrew Reed, number 6 at 170, Aiden Grimes, number 4 at 182, and Caleb Runyon, number 1 at 220. They're as good as anybody in the state, like usual. They are right there with Waverly Shellrock, number 2, and Waukee at number 3. The top three teams are going to be very tough to beat. On Thursday, the Dodgers will face Ames and Des Moines Roosevelt. Ames has two ranked wrestlers with Brent Slade, number 6 at 145, and number 2, Gabe Greenlee at 285. It's nice that we will get to three duels this week. These are opponents we haven't seen all year. Unfortunately, it's on the road, but we need the live action. Heading back to the main page of the sports section, Gale boys basketball team defeated the Manson Northwest Cougars by a score of 56-43. With a tenuous 7-point lead at halftime, the St. Edmund boys basketball team adjusted its strategy in the locker room against Manson Northwest Webster Monday night. The corrections paid off as the Gales pulled away to a 56-43 non-conference victory over the Cougars. Head coach Adolf Kokendorfer's squad outscored Manson Northwest Webster by an 18-5 count in the third period. Suddenly, a single-digit advantage had ballooned to 20. We talked about moving the basketball more and leaning on each other with an extra pass, as well as getting more post touches and working it inside out. There was just too much one-on-one going on in the second period. It really bogged us down. We did a much better job of moving the ball, reversing it, and getting some good angles on passes in the low spot post where we could kick it out to an open shooter, said Kokendorfer. Junior Hayden Mayer led St. Edmund 5-7 for the season with 16 points. Classmate Quentin McCarville had the hot hand in the third quarter, adding 12 for the game. The Cougars didn't give up, taking the fourth period by a 20-13 count. Our guys played hard, and that last quarter was a bright spot, said head coach Caleb Webben. They kept battling. We were still scrambling after loose balls and taking charges. We got into some foul trouble in that third quarter and went to a zone. They hit three or four three-pointers on us during that stretch, and that really extended the lead for them. The Gales returned to action Tuesday night at home against Clare and Goldfield Dallas, 5-5 on the season. St. Edmund posted a 62-57 win in Clarion last month. It's going to be a tough challenge, Kokendorfer said. That was a really close ball game in December. It was good to see us bounce back from Saturday's loss at Clear Lake. They're a really good squad, and I think we played hard despite the final score. It's all about taking positive steps in the right direction. And Manson Northwest Webster is back in action Tuesday against Southeast Valley. The Manson Northwest Webster girls rallied to defeat St. Edmund. For two quarters, St. Edmund held the upper hand against Manson Northwest Webster. A big second half was all the homestanding Cougars would need to prevail by a final score of 48-30. The Gales, 2-10 for the season, built a 20-13 lead at the break, but the Cougars, 3-9 on the year, outscored the Gales 35-10 in the second half to pull win going away. We just didn't get our shots to fall, said head coach C.J. Tracy. We didn't attack the basket nearly enough, settling for too many jump shots. In the first half, we were playing to win. That didn't carry over, though, and they took advantage. Chloe Peterson led Manson with 18 points. Natalie Pearson and Olivia Sturgis had 9 and 8 points, respectively. Senior Leah Neverman had a strong game for the Gales, scoring 12 points. Maya McLean was next in line with 7. The Gales are back in action Tuesday evening, hosting Clearing Goldfield Dallas, and again, the Manson Northwest Webster girls take on Southeast Valley. The Fort Dodge girls bowling team rolled their highest score of the season as the Dodgers split with Johnston on Monday. The girls won 2,531 pins to 2,074, while the Fort Dodge boys fell 3,079 pins to 3,006. Junior Alexis Kenny, turned in the top performance for the Dodger girls, rolling a 408 series. She had games of 214 and 194. Paige Copenhaver had 336, Arissa Lumsden 323, Lexi Hansen 321, Gabby Flores 370, and A.J. Feathers 252. Alexis did what she always does, said head coach Nick Benson. Gabby and Arissa gave us huge second games. We are starting to see things come together. Defending state champion Caleb Anderson returned to the lineup and bowled a 431 series for the Dodger boys. He had games of 223 and 208. Carson Wernig just missed the 400 plateau with a score of 399, scoring in games of 189 and 210. Other Dodgers scorers include Michael Bolton at 386, Kyle Davis at 382, Brady Graves at 374, Christian Miller at 317. We went into the last Bakers down 8, Vincent said. They strung a lot of strikes together and beat us 267 to 205 in the final one. I have to give them credit. They did what they had to do. I told the guys, obviously, we're looking for the win, but to bowl 3,000 on the road is a good day. The Dodgers are back in action on Wednesday when they travel to West Des Moines Galling. Home twin bills for the Dodgers this week in basketball. The four Dodge basketball teams have a two-game homestand. On Tuesdays, they host Urbandale in the Dodger Gym. The boys, 1-7, are coming off a tough loss to 9th-ranked Class 1A Grandview Christian on Saturday. Urbandale has lost 3 straight games and are 1-4 on the season. Dodgers will be back in the Dodger Gym on Friday versus Ankeny, who are 4-3 and have won 3 straight. The second meeting between the Dodgers and the Hawks comes after Ankeny defeated the Dodgers by a score of 80-48 in their own gym earlier this season. The Fort Dodge girls are 2-7 and will face Urbandale 1-3, and then finish the week with Ankeny. They are 5-2. Both games are at home as well. In the first meeting, the Hawks beat the Dodgers by a score of 74-44. For Urbandale, Makina Cole and Meredith Umlin are averaging 8 points. The Dodgers are led by Tori Bennett at 10 points, Doster at 6.6, and Alea Palmer at 5.9, Cheyenne Miller-Hamid at 5.1. So a busy week of sports coming up for the Dodgers and for the Gales. As our time together is about to wrap up, I'll go ahead and take a look at the 10-day forecast. Sunny skies on Wednesday and Thursday, a high of 41 Wednesday, a high of 36 on Thursday. Sunny skies remain on Friday, but we're only going to get up to 19 degrees. Chance of weather coming in this weekend, 40% chance of light snow both Saturday and Sunday. High of 22 on Saturday, high of 28 on Sunday. Mostly cloudy Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and Thursday with highs 27 on Monday, 28 Tuesday and Wednesday, 27 on Thursday. Lows at night, mostly in the upper teens to low 20s during that time period. So there's a chance of winter weather this coming weekend from what I'm hearing, but it's a little early in the week to get too specific about things from what I'm told. So keep an ear open to the forecast, and if you have to travel and go out, just stay safe. Stay healthy, as I say all the time. Thank you for listening to this podcast of the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm glad to be bringing it. I'm Kevin Rogers here at the microphone. Thank you very much for joining us. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. That's iowaradioreading.org. And the IRIS, Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, is proud to bring you all these different podcasts. Thanks again for joining me, and we will talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye, my friends.
This is Jim Ralston, and I'm with IRIS, Short Take from the Iowa Curiosities. Farmers and their toys, Dyersville, Iowa. The wisdom on bumper stickers is true, and those with the most toys truly do win. Then the National Farm Toy Museum in Dyersville is a winner many times over, with two floors of more than 30,000 farm toys and exhibits, ranging from row after row of common tractors to combines, harvesters, and haulers, all the way down the extensive agricultural machinery lineup to an anhydrous ammonia tanker. The museum is a shrine and miniature to the heavy equipment Iowa farmers fuss over, endlessly fix, periodically live in during planting or harvesting, and tirelessly operate to bring home the grain or the beans that bring home the bacon. And don't let the word toy fool you. The only thing toy-like about these farm toys is that they're built to 1/16th or 1/32nd scale, and don't have internal combustion engines. This is Iowa, after all. Farm machines aren't child's play, even when they're toys. Most of the toys are stunningly accurate, not to mention beautiful. Replicas of tractors or combines with particular makers like John Deere and Case, from particular years, with details accurate down to the windshield wipers. Children play with these toys not only to have fun, they got a vocational education in heavy equipment. Highlights of the museum include an exhibit explaining the notion of scale that features a full-size replica of a John Deere tractor accompanied by a row of successfully smaller scale models, from 1/2 scale all the way down to a realistically looking tractor you can carry in your pocket. Upstairs, look for more tractors and harvesters, enclosed in glass cases, more perhaps than you've ever hoped to see. And though the word toy does technically appear in this museum's name, don't expect much playing around. Tractors, trucks, trailers, and combines, even at 1/32nd or 1/64 scale, are way too wrapped up in Iowa's blood, sweat, and sorrow to be simple objects of play. Don't be surprised if you see some old-timer kicking the tires of a tiny Case combine, wondering how it would hold up harvesting more than 2,000 acres. Or some young, unquietly cussing pocket-sized John Deere because it won't turn over. The National Farm Toy Museum is at the intersection of U.S. 20 and Iowa Highway 136 in Dyersville. Open daily from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., the museum also hosts a number of special events. Exhibits throughout the year, the largest of which is the granddaddy of all farm toy shows, held the first full weekend in November. For more information, call 563-875-2727 or visit www.nationalfarmtoymuseum.com. That was an excerpt from Iowa Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.